Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 36, 37, 38, and 39. O best of the Bharatas, now please hear from me about the three kinds of happiness by which the conditioned soul enjoys, and by which he sometimes comes to the end of all distress. Report. A conditioned soul tries to enjoy material happiness again and again. Thus he chews the chewed. But sometimes in the course of such enjoyment he becomes relieved from material entanglement by association with a great soul. In other words, a conditioned soul is always engaged in some type of sense gratification. But when he understands by good association that it is only a repetition of the same thing, and he is awakened to his real Krishna consciousness, he is sometimes relieved from such repetition of so-called happiness. Text 37. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. Purport. In the pursuit of self-realization, one has to follow many rules and regulations to control the mind and the senses, and to concentrate the mind on the self. All these procedures are very difficult, bitter like poison. But if one is successful in following the regulations and comes to the transcendental position, he begins to drink real nectar, and he enjoys life. Text 38. That happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects, and which appears like nectar at first but poison at the end, is said to be of the nature of passion. Purport. A young man and a young woman meet, and the senses drive the young man to see her, to touch her, and to have sexual intercourse. In the beginning, this may be very pleasing to the senses, but at the end, after some time, it becomes just like poison. They are separated, or there is divorce, there is lamentation, there is sorrow, etc. Such happiness is always in the mode of passion. Happiness, derived from a combination of the senses and the sense objects, is always, 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 always. It doesn't say that. It just says it once. A cause of distress, and should be avoided by all means. Text 39. And that happiness which is blind to self-realization, which is delusion from beginning to end, and which arises from sleep, laziness, and delusion, is said to be of the nature of ignorance. Purport. One who takes pleasure in laziness and in sleep is certainly in the mode of darkness, ignorance, and one who has no idea how to act and how not to act is also in the mode of ignorance. For the person in the mode of ignorance, everything is illusion. There is no happiness, either in the beginning or at the end. For the person in the mode of passion, there might be some kind of ephemeral happiness in the beginning, and at the end distress. But for the person in the mode of ignorance, there is only distress, both in the beginning and at the end. And if that wasn't enough, text 40. Krishna says, there is no being existing, either here or among the demigods in the higher planetary systems, which is freed from these three modes, born of material nature. Very short purport, one sentence. The Lord here summarizes the total influence of the three modes of material nature over the entire universe. Well, true to the message of the entire Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's purports take one from the introduction to this topic and to each step of the topic to look at transcendence. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nish Trigunya Vivarja, Krishna says in the second chapter. The Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. Rise above all the three modes of material nature. Arjuna, be transcendental to all of them. Nishtraigunya Bhavarjana. Become transcendental to them all. The means of becoming transcendental to them all, very simply, is proper association. Proper association means hearing, submitting, and serving. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. Hearing, submitting, and serving. Put it in different order. Submitting, hearing, and serving. Those three components. That's how one can aim at self-realization. Even when influenced by the modes of nature. And part of the symptom of the mode of goodness is that there's at least theoretical knowledge that one can understand. This is this mode, that is that mode, and that's the other mode. Like at the end of the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is describing the characteristic, because Arjuna asks, what's the quality? It's a nice question. What's the quality of one who's above the three qualities? Because we normally think of qualities, well, according to our experience, it's under the influence of the modes of nature. There's this quality, that quality. What's the quality of one who is free from material qualities? And Krishna's answer is naturally very appropriate. Krishna says, one who is not attracted by this mode, that mode, or the other mode, and is not in distress when they're gone. One is not enlivened by illumination or attachment. What's the mode of ignorance one that he uses? Fear. He who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, nor longs for them when they disappear. They're neutral. They're full. They're self-realized. So the indication is then the self-realized person may feel, certainly is aware of what's going on in the world of duality, and they may even feel some attraction, some delusion, some enlightenment. But they're not identifying with that or lamenting when the enlightenment is gone or the object of attachment is gone. So at least, you know, that's a preliminary threshold of self-realization. But the modes of nature are very powerful. They have the whole world dancing. According to their dictation and identifying with the dance. So the happiness, which is characterized by the quality of goodness, in the beginning, it's some regulation. I'll just share this little experience I had on Sunday. An Orthodox Jew, a 25-year-old or something like that, young man, came to the Tohaku temple for the first time. He came with a friend, an Indian girl, and with her mother and father, who I guess they know through school or something. And it was his first visit to a temple. So we had some discussion after the program. And his first question was, then in Judaism and in Islam, there's an understanding that goes something like this. There's the law, God's law. And one who follows God's law receives the grace of God. And one who fails to follow the law is outside the grace of God. And so a big part of Judaism is knowing what is the law and following the law and becoming situated in the grace of God. And is there something like that in your religion? I expressed that Prabhupada said, this is standard, that religion means laws of God and religious means to follow the laws of God. So, certainly, there's laws of mankind given by Manu, the lawgiver of mankind, and one is to follow those laws. And then there's categories of laws. There's laws that are for everybody. There are laws that are specific according to your psychophysical nature. There's emergency, and there's preferred. You have different kinds of laws. So certainly that's there. But more important than following the law is knowing that the purpose behind the law. Because it's like, it's one thing to be an obedient citizen, and it's another thing to love your country. Or it's one thing to be an obedient son, because another religious teaching is, you know, obey thy father and mother. Or, you know, different ways of saying the same thing. It's another thing that there's love. Or it's one thing to obey God, because if you don't, you get smacked. And then it's another thing to love God. So the purpose behind the law is more of the essence of what Vaishnavism is teaching. So it's not just know what the laws are and follow them, even if it, in the beginning it seems to be restrictive, because the restrictions are there for elevation of consciousness, certainly elevation through the modes of nature, because the lower nature will take the happiness in the mode of passion. Happiness in the mode of passion looks like nectar. By the end, it turns out to be poison. So my goodness, if you're a parent, or if you're a teacher, or if you just care about somebody, and you see somebody is about to take something that's poisonous, and they think it's nice, they think it's nectar, excuse, wait, don't take that. Or like, you know, somebody that knows poison ivy, don't go over there, it's poison ivy, you'll get, you'll see your skin, but it looks nice, but it's poison ivy, or something that's detrimental. Naturally, the person that's in the mode of goodness will want to inform the person in the mode of passion, that's poison, don't take that poison. But the person in the mode of passion will think, no, it's nectar. Don't restrict my sense of enjoyment, it's nectar. But then, after the sense of enjoyment, it's poison. Now, Prabhupada gives some really unpleasant possibilities with male-female attraction. But if properly regulated, it goes into the position of goodness. It's not simply because, oh, senses are attracted, and here's a license for sense attraction. But that's the wrong idea. That's the mode of passion churning religious principles. That's not the purpose of religious principle, is licensed sense gratification. Thinking like that, that's a mode of passion idea, and it ends up to be poison. The mode of goodness idea is follow the codes of religion, because they're for elevation. They bring one closer to the soul's natural nature, and the real happiness of the soul as a result. Self-realization. And happiness in the mode of ignorance, it has two parts. Covering and the throwing potency. The avaranatmika shakti and prapekshapika shakti. The two features of Maya are, one is that the living entity is thrown into material existence, and the other is that potency that keeps the living entity there. So even if you get free from one, you got the other one. Even if the idea of religious enjoyment is there, you're still bound by the mood of enjoyment, however religious it may be. And as a result, one remains blind to self-realization. So the mode of goodness has as its feature at least the attraction for the principle of self-realization. And because of the attraction for the principle of self-realization, the apparent poison part, that is the regulation of the senses, the regulation of the senses according to religious principle. That's something arbitrary, but according to religious principle. And again, the elevation is for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. For the purpose of pleasing Krishna or not. I don't know, not otherwise. Like the tortoise example. What's the tortoise example? The tortoise can extend his limbs, the tortoise can withdraw his limbs. The extending of the limbs example is if there's some service for Krishna. And if there's not service to Krishna, withdrawal of the limbs. Hanuman's a nice example. There's a long story, the bona fides of which I don't know. So I'm reluctant to repeat it. But when the monkey warriors were standing on the shore of the ocean, and they were wanting to verify, what's the name of Jatayu's brother?
Sampati.
And what did Sampati tell the monkey warriors? And what did he say?
She's in Lanka.
How did Sampati know?
Because he has good vision.
Yeah. Although the island of Lanka was so far away that normally one couldn't even see it. But Sampati could not only see it, but he could see the details. They knew exactly where Sita was, so they wanted to verify that Sampati knew what he was talking about. So, what happened next? What happened next? Go ahead. They were deciding who could jump, how far could each of the monkeys jump.
So many miles,
yeah. But not enough miles.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
Jambavan goes and reminds Hanuman, you have this power to fly over the place to the ocean.
So Hanuman was standing by the side very humbly. Because it's his nature as a Vaishnava, he's very humble. But when he was hearing from Jambavan, Hanuman, wait a minute, you're the one, you can do this. Because when you were just a small little baby, you saw the sun in the sky, right? You know that one?
Yeah.
And what happened when he saw the sun in the sky?
He thought it was a mango and he jumped and he...
To go get the sun, but it was thinking it was a mango. And what happened?
He went.
Was soaring in the air and further and further and further. And what happened?
He met Surya.
Well, Indra thought, he's after my kingdom. I'm going to get him. And then what did Indra do?
Called his thunderbolt and threw it in Hanuman's chair.
He hit him in the jaw and he fell to the ground. Right? So, from that time, Hanuman forgot how his capacity to jump. But when Jambavan reminded him, then all of a sudden his body started getting bigger and bigger and bigger just to prepare himself for this big service he had to do to serve Ram and verify that Sita was there. And he had this special signet ring of Ram to give to Sita so that Sita will know surely Ram will be coming very soon. So he was not... Prabhupada expressed this very beautifully. There's two ways of saying the little different. Even if one is in the modes of nature, I mean, who isn't in the modes of nature? Let's see what Krishna says about who is in the modes of nature. There is no being, either here or among the demigods and higher planetary systems, who is freed from these modes, born of material nature. I guess that includes us too, huh? The truth is out. We're influenced by the modes of nature. So how can we be engaged in devotional service if we're influenced by the modes of nature? We can engage, just as so Prabhupada was explaining this, like Arjuna. He was a Kshatriya. A Kshatriya is influenced by this power of passion to control and to protect and defend. It requires passion. One can't be a Kshatriya that's, you know, a sissy. One has to be very chivalrous, very spirited, competitive, powerful. So, the answer is, if one engages in that activity in service to Krishna, Tosan Krishna expressed it in a very interesting way. I never heard it expressed before or after that. He said, it's one thing being conditioned by the modes of material nature and being engaged by the modes of material nature. It's another thing to be engaged in Krishna's service and engage the modes of nature. Could you do that again? Engage the modes of nature. So, if your primary conception of self is, I am Krishna's servant, then whatever it is, fill in the blank, whatever it is for Krishna's pleasure. Because the foundational point is, I am Krishna's servant, and whatever I do should be for Krishna's pleasure. So if it's the Kshatriya protecting, or the intellectual studying, or if it's the worker working, or if it's the Vaishya engaging in agriculture and cow protection, according to their modes of nature, they're engaging that mode of nature in service unto Krishna. Because the core or the foundational point is service unto Krishna. By that service unto Krishna foundation, one becomes elevated in quality, one becomes elevated in consciousness, one can certainly follow the regulations of, like going back to what this Jewish, Orthodox Jewish young man was saying. And by the way, he wants to study Bhagavad Gita. But his two questions were, who's a good teacher? And what rendering of Bhagavad Gita should I study? Because he said, somebody asked me about a year ago, if I wanted to become a member of the Jewish faith, what should I do? He said, for a minute I was silent because my mind was scanning over, well, there's all these different varieties of Jewish faith. And we, you know, which one? And there's so many different teachers of those varieties of Jewish faith and so many different particular renditions of the scripture according to the particular teacher, according to the particular sect division of Judaism. So how would I answer this question? How would I become? So similarly, he said, for your religion, which presentation of Bhagavad Gita should I read? And it's really important. I can't just go and read the book. I need a teacher. Then how do I select the right teacher? Good question, huh? Good question. Serious person. Looks like Chandrasekhar Swami is going to be his teacher, and guess which Bhagavad Gita it's going to be. So, back to following the regulations, the purpose behind the regulations needs to be at front and center, or at the core. The self-realization then elevates the quality of the mode of nature, where the purpose of self-realization is to be served, the quality of goodness, and because of that, if there's some inconvenience, that's okay. That means it looks in the beginning to be like poison, but in the end it's nectar, because it's a happiness that's enduring. It's a happiness that's for the pleasure of the Supreme. It's a happiness that's in harmony with the real identity of the self. It leads to God consciousness. Happiness in the mode of goodness leads to, it's not the essence of, but it brings one to the precincts of, or to the boundaries of, transcendental realization of God. Being a religious person is good, provided one can recognize the purpose behind the religion, it can be transcendental. So, happiness according to the three modes of nature, and transcendental life is not being, read it again, not hating one of the other modes that's not like the mode of goodness, nor despairing when, by the competition of the modes of nature, one of those that one is most accustomed to disappears. So either the illumination disappears, if one likes the mode of goodness, or the attachment or the object of the attachment disappears, if one is attracted to the mode of passion or delusion, because of the influence of the mode of passion, or the mode of ignorance. Remaining steady in being situated in the self is the objective from this study of the modes of nature. Any discussion or questions? Short bugger with the discussion, yeah.
Thank you very much. What does it mean to be situated in itself?
We'll start with what it doesn't mean. Well, let's say what it does mean. It means to be situated in the fundamentally an understanding of our real identity as spirit soul. Going further, that the spirit soul has individuality. Going further, the spirit soul has a relationship with Krishna as being situated in the self. What it doesn't mean is identifying with our conditioning and going with the flow, as they say, per our conditioning. Because there is a sense of self that's who we are according to our conditioned nature. But this is being situated in the self is self-realization. Who we are, who is God in our relationship with Him. Situated in the self. Yes?
For that class, you were talking about how the different...
Keep going.
You're saying that the different modes of nature can be very delusional sometimes, in the sense that we can't tell whether we're in control of the mode of nature, or, you know, how we feel.
Or it's controlling us.
Or it's controlling us, exactly. And something that I've been wondering lately is if, when you feel like you're in the mode of goodness, you're actually in the mode of passion, but you're thinking you're in the mode of goodness because the mode of passion can create those feelings that you think you're in the mode of goodness. Does have that effect sometimes. You know, you're chanting very happily, you're feeling very joyful, and you feel like you're in the mode of goodness, but in fact it's all just sense gratification, and you're in the mode of passion.
Well, to go back to something you said at the very beginning, I wasn't speaking about, just correcting and editing, exercise right now. I didn't say we have to look at whether we are controlling the modes of nature, the modes of nature are controlling us. I didn't say that, because Krishna is in control of the modes of nature. But what the distinction was, are we being controlled by the modes of nature, or are we engaging the modes of nature in Krishna service? Are we being engaged by the modes of nature, or are we consciously? Let's say there's some big task that needs to be done. Or, you know, that Prabhupada said that Prabhupada wanted the Vrindavan temple to be finished. Or give another example, Prabhupada wanted the Chaitanya Charitamrita to be completed, 17 volumes in 2 months. And the devotee's response to Prabhupada was impossible. And his response was, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. 2 months. So to do that, they had to literally around the clock. They had, you know, machines that had to have somebody at those machines around the clock. And people that are painting paintings around the clock. And, you know, they had to engage in intense activity that resembles the mode of passion. But it was for Krishna, or for the spiritual master, that specific request was being made, and he was dead serious about it. He wanted it to be done. So it had its intensity, like passionate activity has its intensity, but it was for the mission and the direct instruction of the spiritual master. As an example, that's just an editing exercise. But so that's not the essence of your question. The essence of your question was, I forgot the essence of your question. Do it again, the last part.
The idea was, how do you know that you're acting in the mode of goodness?
Because mode of goodness seems to be enjoying, like chanting nicely and think, oh, I'm enjoying. Happiness in going back to chapter 17, the mode of goodness conditions one to a sense of happiness, the sense of feeling some contentment. There's some passion mixed with that. In the 17th chapter, Krishna says, the 14th chapter, Krishna says that the modes of nature are in constant competition with one another. Sometimes the mode of goodness is predominant, sometimes the mode of passion is predominant, sometimes the mode of ignorance is predominant, because where there's goodness, there's some mixture of passion, some mixture of ignorance, and then the passion may predominate and the goodness subsides. Or the ignorance may predominate and the goodness and passion subside. So there's constant competition. So when there's the mode of goodness that's predominating, there's the mode of passion present. Not sometimes. It's always there. And that mode of passion says, I want to be the enjoyer of prakriti. I want to be the enjoyer of, in the case of the common sense of mode of goodness, being in a selfless position of giving something to some other, helping a less fortunate person. We all know what that happiness is. And it's the mode of goodness happiness, and it's the sense of contentment that conditions the soul to identify not with the self, or not be self-situated, but to be in the I am benevolent, I am, you know, the conditioning of the sense of contentment with that mode of goodness. It's the tinge of being the enjoyer of the situation. Out of my compassion, I've done something for another person. That's the enjoying spirit in the quality of goodness. And it's binding. Whereas the position of selfless service is not unto the other person, nor unto me, but unto Krishna. And Krishna is the enjoyer. And that's the standard of happiness that's freed from the modes of nature. So, another little editing exercise. It's not that when you're chanting nicely, or that when you're doing, on a material level, doing a benevolent act, something that's an act of kindness unto another person. That's not the mode of passion, that's the mode of goodness. But it's tinged with the mode of passion. And very soon, the goodness feature diminishes and the enjoyer position predominates. So it's the constant competition factor. But that contentment that arises from mode of goodness, let's say a social worker, or let's even say Mother Teresa, as someone that's very focused in their dedication upon a physician that goes into a disease-infested place. And the people that went to serve in Haiti, for example. If the motivation, there were a number of devotees. I was the GBC chairman at the time. We arranged a whole delegation. It wasn't like publicized a whole lot, but there was a whole lot of people from all over the world that went to Haiti to help. So a devotee can also do that for the purpose of the people that are in distress help his brother, but also give Krishna consciousness. Like one fellow that I met in the London airport, he was on his way. He knew how to build houses from next to nothing. He knew how to do it, so he went there to help people who had next to nothing how to build houses, because their houses were finished. And another one, had another expertise, and another one another expertise. And other people are just going to help. And supplies and so on. So, if the purpose behind the activity is remembered, that is, these are part and parcels of Krishna and they should be served because they're Krishna's parts and parcels and Krishna should be pleased by that. And that means, that's what's in their heart and that's what's in their words as well as their actions. Then that's not mode of passion. It's not even mode of goodness. It's transcendental. And chanting, same. We're not free from the modes of nature. There is no being existing, either here or among the demigods in the higher planetary systems, which is freed from these three modes, born of material nature. But if the purpose behind is, the more that we can connect with that purpose behind while chanting, that Krishna is to be pleased, then the modes of nature diminish and eventually are eliminated. One becomes situated in the consciousness of simply pleasing Krishna. That's the purifying or uplifting agent that carries from beyond the modes of nature.
So, Gunaraj, you mentioned that in order to come to the position of self-realization, you have to have that submission, inquiry, and service from
unto a person.
Unto a person.
Yeah.
In the fourth chapter. Can specifically, I'm thinking on the submission part, which is, you know, following and submitting to the instructions of the spiritual master, and in the process of sincerely trying to submit to the orders of the spiritual master and the instructions, with the condition of the material mode of nature, it goes into the fluctuation. Can the other two carrying you at one point to actually expect to overcome that? When is it going to come to perfectly submit to the order?
Yeah, what you're saying is, you know, because we are conditioned, we're stuck. Because even the submission is tainted, and the service is tainted, and the inquiry is tainted, because we're tainted. And once you're stuck, you're stuck. It's a tar baby. You can't get unstuck. As soon as you do something to get unstuck, that's stuck too. Because it's a tar baby. You know that example, right? It's a nursery story for kids in America. Even for people from India don't know that one. You don't know what that example means, right? Say a baby is something that's cute. So if there's a tar baby, you know, the baby that you put your hand on the tar, and it's, you get stuck to the tar. So now once you're stuck to the tar, what are you going to do? Because as soon as you put something else against the object to remove your hand from the tar, that's stuck too. And then that's stuck, and then that's stuck, and you're all stuck. No matter what you do, you're more stuck. That's the tar baby. So what do? You're in the modes of nature. You've got, you know, this tattvadarshi, or here in the purport, Prabhupada is saying, the great soul. And I've got my modes of nature. I'm coming in contact with this great soul. As far as I'm concerned, I'm submitting, but actually it's the modes of nature. And I'm just, you know, doing all this selfish thing and enjoying thing and think it's nice, but, you know, it's actually the modes of nature. Fortunately, there's the release mechanism with the tar baby, the modes of nature tar baby, is that the purifying influence of the great soul, or the tattvadarshi. That's the release mechanism. They elevate, their association elevates us, and not the other way around. They don't become contaminated by our association. They become an agent of Krishna that transforms our character and quality. So even we're covered and limited. That's why it requires that personality. Otherwise, we don't need that personality, just our effort. But it doesn't work that way because we're conditioned.
Thank you, Maharaj. Today's class is very brilliant. In the beginning of the lecture, you were explaining how the simple method of transcending the mode, similar question to Subhok rules, is association. One would imagine that association must be beyond the modes to bring us beyond the modes, provided one does not always have that association of person beyond the modes. One may be devoted but not beyond the modes, then how does that association help us to move forward?
You know, they're reminders of, and then there's always the beyond the modes vani that can carry both parties beyond the modes. Just like, you know, every one of us, we're influenced by the modes of nature, but we're also in contact with practice and transcendental teachings that are elevating us, and as we become elevated, it helps others become elevated. As one amongst us becomes elevated in our association, it works that way. So we're reminding one another regularly by reading, by vibrating, by remembering, by although we're influenced by the modes, how do we apply? You know, sharing like that, because the object is transcendental, it's elevating. The object of focus is elevating. Even if amongst us there's not the liberated soul amongst us, the teachings are, and the practice is. The more we can get that direct association with liberated souls, the better. It's still elevated. Another way of saying the same thing is under the direction of a liberated soul and thus elevating. The principles are being followed, and the person who is the agent of those principles is being followed.
Just a follow-up. Many times it is experienced that without that person, that person's direct association, our connection sometimes tends to weaken.
Sure.
We don't feel it as much. How to strengthen that?
And so the last part was?
How to make that connection strong, even when we have reinforced
by submission. Factors. By submission. I mean, here's Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. And how many persons who, without association with Prabhupada, by reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, are becoming elevated? By, you know, submission to the Vani. Although probably not physically proximate. The relationship can be very real. Very, very real. Very vibrant. Someone else? Yes?
Hare Krishna. On the Radha Damodar bus party, I remember hearing that devotees were praying to the books just like
deities. Yes.
Well, specific books or any of
just like, you know, a big deity or a medium deity or a small deity. The question was put to Srila Prabhupada, along with our activity of distributing your books, when we're not in our temple, we're in our vans, should we have deities? And Prabhupada's reply was, let my books be your deities. And that was carried out.
He said earlier, I didn't catch it, but he said you can engage the three modes of material nature. How do we engage the three modes?
This is something that Narottam Das Thakur also speaks about or teaches about, where let's imagine that we're not transcendental and we're sitting there studying Prabhupada's books. So the one way to study Prabhupada's books is you fall asleep and your head hits the book. That's not very effective. Another way is, you think of yourself as a real smart student, and so you study like a smart student studies a text, and they try to conquer the subject matter. That mode of passion, I'm going to like master the subject matter. Not very effective either. And the mode of goodness is, I know that this subject matter will purify my existence, and so I'm the gates of knowledge, the knowledge acquiring senses are open, and I wish to receive the enlightenment that's coming from Krishna through his transcendental teachings. It's still the mode of goodness, it's not yet transcendence, but if one can engage in that way, then one is engaging that mode of nature in order to reach the object, Krishna.
Only in the mode of goodness.
That's what you got?
Oh, okay.
We'll go into the next one. The next example is, we can say Arjuna, because Prabhupada gave that example. Just heard it, but let's say, that it's not Arjuna, let's say there's the Bud Billigan parade coming up during the summer. And you know how much activity is involved in arranging for that Bud Billigan parade. My gosh, it's like a lot of stuff. So one can be like, okay, you know, I'm the controller, and look out, here I come, because I'm the controller. And, you know, that's not going to get a lot, it's going to send a lot of people to the other direction. It's not going to bring the team together to get the work done. But if one is thinking, okay, I'm prepared because I know that so there's a lot of activity that needs to be done. So I'm going to be in the most cooperative mood possible, but I know I have to put like an extra effort during that week in advance. But I don't want to be a, you know, wet noodle when the whole thing is over either. So I want to chant my rounds very intensely, very carefully, and execute my duties very carefully so that all this work can get done in a cooperative sphere with all the devotees. And then destruction, a good example is Hanuman. After Hanuman found Sita, what did he do? If you don't know, you can ask Prahlad. You know. What did he do? After he gave the ring, then he went, and so now he's back standing on the wall overlooking the whole of Lanka, and what is his thought? I should show these Rakshasas a lesson. Ram is soon going to come, and they shouldn't think of him as ordinary. They should have fear in their hearts. So he burned Lanka, and it was ravaging the tree, you know, uprooting the trees and laughing hideously and telling them, you're all finished. Ram is going to come and avenge Sita's kidnapping, and you will all be destroyed. Ha ha! Smashing walls and ripping trees up from their roots and bashing destroying the city, this beautiful golden city.
So when it became like a tree broken down wood, golden yeah. thing just yeah. scattered.
So mode of ignorance is destruction. So he wasn't in the mode of ignorance. He was serving Ram. Otherwise, he's, you know, standing on the shore, wondering, yeah, who's going to go there?
So he's engaging.
He's engaging in as appropriate for the circumstance. He's engaging in service to Ram. He's a transcendentalist. He's not in the mode of nature. Okay. Anyone else? Go for it.
Yeah, yes. So the statement about the modes of nature affecting every living entity, that means...
You want to hear it again? It's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Yeah. But the transcendentalist or the pure devotee.
He's the exception.
Exception.
Anyone else? Okay, it's kirtan time.